It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here in the Bettors Box. It's BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for April 24th, presented by Arby's. We have the meats. For those that don't get that joke, well, you must have missed the screw-up that I had on Thursday's show where I uploaded the wrong audio, the uncut version of the show. Fortunately, a couple of listeners pointed it out to me early on in the day, so I was able to switch that up and put the right version of the show out there. But it was kind of an embarrassing moment for me, but the guys out there that listen to the show regularly made it much, much easier on me. So thank you very much to those guys, Fat Moses, Mikey DFS, Dave Styles, those guys. Really, really great, loyal listeners of the show. So guys, thank you so much for that. Actually, today's show and all of our Bang the Book radio content is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use that promo code BTB Radio. Good for a $10 free bet just for signing up, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Coming your way on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday this week, as always. Again, that will be the format for the most part for us here up into the month of August when we start talking some more football. Speaking of football, we're going to talk football tomorrow with Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. On our Tuesday Takeover show, we're going to talk about the NFL Draft. We'll talk about some of the prop bets that are out there as well. Draft, of course, coming up here on Thursday. And like I said, right now, the plan for next Tuesday's Tuesday Takeover show, that would be May 2nd, hoping to get Keeneland Dan from Fat Bald Guy Racing to chat some Kentucky Oaks and some Kentucky Derby with us. So that is the plan here going forward on Bang the Book Radio. Before I get into today's edition of the Bettors Box, just want to remind you of all the tremendous content up over at the website. We've got several different picks and analysis articles across Major League Baseball and the NBA. Mine, of course, is one that you get the notifications for if you've subscribed to those notifications over at the website, which if you haven't done that yet, something that you should probably do. That way you can get that as quickly as possible, get some of those picks of mine before the lines actually start to move. That is one of the hard parts about, you know, doing an article like that, is sometimes things just happen to move around. And in moneyline sports, as we know, the market can be very fluid. Things can change very quickly. But you've got those notifications available there that will also show you when the show is posted, so you can jump on that as quickly as possible as well. I also have my MLB Daily Fantasy. I'll have some NHL playoff series previews for the second round coming up probably tomorrow. I'm going to try and work on them a little bit today. But for the most part, I think we'll have all four of those up for tomorrow. We've got just 8 teams left standing. Kind of amazing to think about that already. But the second round is upon us in the NHL. We've got some other NFL draft written content over there. We've got our matchup data section, trends, power lines, our odds screen, all kinds of stuff over there at the website. We are your one-stop shop for all of your sports betting needs and information. Also, while you're over there, check out the contest that we have, our daily streaker contest, also monthly pick of the day. Then some cash prizes for the top win percentage, top ROI, and also amount of units won. Again, all you have to do is sign up over there at bangthebook.com. Like I said, we don't spam your email. We don't do any of that other bullshit that other sites out there do. Just want you to sign up for those contests and take your shot at some cash prizes. So the format for today's show here, we'll go beyond the box score to start things off. Then I'll take a look down the lines, talk about some of the moves we've seen since we were last on the air on Thursday. I'll have a pick for Monday night. Instead of a sabermetric stat of the day, we'll do the Monday mailbag today. I've got 3 questions for that, 2 of them baseball related, 1 of them not, but I'll just answer them all at the same time here. A quick daily fantasy tip, and then what I'm looking at here for the week ahead. So let's dive in with this Monday, April 24th edition of the Bettors Box. So the Chicago Cubs took 2 out of 3 from the Cincinnati Reds. Not a big surprise. The Cubs winning a series over the Reds isn't a big deal. However, the story for me here is the Chicago Cubs starting pitching. Okay, I had some talks with a listener on Twitter, John Roy, I think it's 5807, on Twitter, talking about Jake Arrieta and how he looked over the weekend. And look, this Cubs starting rotation has some serious, serious problems. John Lester, right now, the healthiest of the group, it certainly would seem like, but 5 2/3, 9 hits, 5 earned, a couple walks, 4 strikeouts. Jake Arrieta, 6 innings pitched, 8 hits, 5 runs total, 4 of them earned, no walks. He did strike out 8. John Lackey gave up 7 runs in 6 innings, 5 of them earned on 6 hits, couple walks, 7 strikeouts. Look, this rotation's got some problems right now. Kyle Hendricks is really struggling with a 6.19 ERA, 5.84 FIP, 4.11 xFIP. So, you know, he should get a little bit better. But still, this is a guy that has impeccable command, and he just hasn't been able to get a whole lot of outs so far this season. His velocity is down. Jake Arrieta's velocity is down almost 2 miles per hour. Now, something you got to keep in mind here about this is that, look, there are some guys that start slow with their velocity. There are some guys that don't throw very hard in the month of April. Corey Kluber is one where traditionally his velocity is down in the month of April. And, of course, this year coming off of the deep playoff run, not a big surprise that it's down. The Cubs, of course, a team coming off of a deep playoff run as well because, unfortunately, they won the World Series. But the thing about it is, league-wide, and I've talked about this before, velocity is up across the board. And a lot of it has to do with the new tracking methods, and a lot of people out there in the stat community are scrambling to figure out some controls to put in place to account for this league-wide increase. But when you've got a guy that's not throwing as hard, that's a big-time problem. And for Arrieta right now to be down 2 miles per hour when almost everybody else in the league is up because of the new tracking differences, that's very, very significant. That is a big, big problem to look at here for the Chicago Cubs. John Lester's velocity is down a little bit as well, which again is concerning because the rest of the league is up. I'm not as much worried about a guy like John Lester. However, Lester did cross that 2,000 inning threshold last year. Something I've talked about a little bit with Felix Hernandez, something a lot of people have been studying, is once pitchers get up into that 2,000 inning range, that's when you start to see some drop off in both control and command. And it's kind of been a little bit that way for Lester here so far. And again, he's a guy low ERA, higher xFIP, so maybe there's some regression in there with his numbers. The Cubs are a great defensive team, so you know maybe they can head off some of these problems with their starting pitchers. But, man, there are some big-time issues. And I got to say this here, too. This isn't tonight's pick, but you look at a guy like Brett Anderson, who's going tonight for the Cubs against the Pirates, 4.40 ERA, 3.32 FIP, 3.54 xFIP, but his strikeout-to-walk rates aren't very good. He's only given up 1 home run, so that's why his FIP is a little bit lower. But if you look at him, first-pitch strike percentage down, velocity down, zone percentage is poor, zone contact rate 92.6% for his career, 88.5% this year, so there's some regression in that. His swinging strike rate is 2.7% above his career rate, regression coming in that. So Brett Anderson's a guy that I think regression is coming for here very quickly. All of a sudden, this Cubs starting rotation across the board, just full of red flags. And this is a team that's going to be priced very, very high. Now, again, they've got a phenomenal offense and a very, very good defense and a very strong bullpen. This is still a team capable of winning a lot of games. But I think that if you can make some spot plays here against these starters with some of the Cubs' inflated numbers, I think you'll probably find ways to make some money going against the Cubs on a game-by-game basis. Again, I think over the long haul, they'll probably be okay as long as these things aren't necessarily injury-related. But again, watch the Cubs very, very closely, particularly their starting pitchers here over the next few weeks. As far as the Reds go in this series, we saw some regression from the Reds' pen. Michael Lorenzen wasn't very good. Robert Stevenson still doesn't look like a major league arm. Raisel Iglesias got touched up a little bit. One thing you may want to do if you're out there in the fantasy marketplace, Drew Storen, he's more of your traditional one-inning short reliever type of guy. It wouldn't surprise me if Brian Price, if some of these guys like Lorenzen and Iglesias start to drop off a little bit, it wouldn't surprise me if Price abandons what they've been doing from a bullpen management standpoint. Now, I absolutely love what they've been doing. They're taking guys that couldn't hack it as starters, although I think Iglesias could have hacked it as a starter, but he has some injury concerns. But he's using multi-inning relievers, and I really like that. The game is very specialized. You want to try to look for the next big inefficiency, and he's trying to use Iglesias and Lorenzen in almost an Andrew Miller type of role, sort of what the Astros are doing with Chris Devinsky. I like that. But if it starts to not work out as well, Brian Price doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to keep doing it. So if Drew Storen's available out there in your fantasy leagues, you may want to take a look at him. He's been very strong here as kind of a bridge to those back end guys. We'll see what happens with the Reds. It wouldn't be a surprise to me to see them drop off a little bit with the pace that they're on. But, you know, hey, I mean, the key may be Amir Garrett, who pitches tonight against Milwaukee. He's just been absolutely terrific. Moving on from that series, the Colorado Rockies sweep the San Francisco Giants. I mentioned on Saturday the chance to go against Antonio Senzatella. Didn't work out. He actually pitched really well again, and Matt Moore was pretty terrible for the Giants. And that's really what the story is here with the San Francisco Giants. The Madison Bumgarner injury is a significant blow. There's really no way to say enough about how much this hurts the Giants. And there was kind of a discussion on Twitter and, talking about which player on which team would be, the absolutely most catastrophic injury that could happen. And a lot of people, of course, were saying, Trout with Anaheim, and yes, obviously that's a huge thing. Arenado with Colorado would be really big. But for the Giants to lose Madison Bumgarner, a guy that's made 30 starts several straight seasons, a guy that's been very, very, very good for them, this is a huge blow. And a big reason why it's such a blow is because Matt Moore is getting rocked right now. If you look at average exit velocity, he's up there at the top of the list. He's given up a significant amount of hard contact. Matt Cain, not very good. Johnny Cueto, slow start for him. Jeff Samardzija, he's a guy. He's kind of an average starting pitcher. All of a sudden, this Giants starting rotation goes from maybe a tick above average to being clearly below average without Madison Bumgarner. And this is a Giants team that a couple of years ago when Hunter Pence was out, may have even been last year, I don't know, all the years run together for me now. But when Hunter Pence was out, this offense was an abomination. And it sort of feels like the Giants, for whatever reason, are one of those teams where they just need things to be in perfect harmony. They can't really do a whole lot in the face of adversity. And it's hard to say because you have a team that's won 3 World Series titles this decade. But it just feels like when there's some sort of, interruption in their day-to-day rhythm, like having Pence out of the lineup, they've struggled before when they've had Buster Posey out of the lineup. And then now this Bumgarner thing, things could get very bad in a hurry for the Giants. And they're already pretty bad as it is. I mean, they're 6-11 right now. And a lot of guys in the middle of the order are hitting pretty well. Now you make their starting pitching even worse. Their middle relief has been hit or miss. The Giants are in a really precarious spot here. And it would not shock me if things get away from them over the next 6 to 8 weeks while Bumgarner is out. And it may provide some value for us on them in the second half of the season. If they decide to put together a little bit of a run and try to make a push. But for right now, it'd be very, very hard for me to find spots to back the Giants. It's just going to be very, very tricky to find those spots where you're in a pretty good situation. As far as the Colorado Rockies go, look, I still think this team is overinflated, and that's not a pun on the altitude that's there. The bullpen is fantastic. The starting rotation, it seems to me like it's a lot of smoke and mirrors right now. I don't think Antonio Senzatella is that good. I love the fastball command. He's got a decent slider. But again, as he starts to see teams a second time, particularly those in the National League West, as he starts to get exposed a little bit more by Coors Field, there's some regression coming there. Kyle Freeland, of course, there's definitely regression coming for him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just too low on the Rockies because I was low on the Rockies coming into the season. I certainly underestimated the bullpen, but I'm not ready to back off of my preseason thoughts. I mean, especially from a win total standpoint, because you're looking at the big picture, and depth was such a big thing for me with those season win totals. The Rockies don't have a whole lot of it. And this bullpen, which has been such a strength for them, lots of guys that have been patched together by surgeons, lots of Tommy John guys and other types of procedures. The rotation is not particularly experienced. And when you're going every 5 days, possibly every 6th day, it's just different at the big league level than it is in Double-A. It's great to be traveling by plane instead of bus. And obviously you'd think guys would be a little bit fresher because of that, but I'm not ready to buy in with the Rockies yet. From a run differential standpoint, they've been kind of middle of the road for a decent chunk of the season until they had a couple blowouts here late in this Giants series. I'm just not ready to go yet. But again, I think part of the problem for me is that the Rockies are such a hard team to determine statistically because everything is inflated at Coors Field and it hurts their pitching metrics as well. When you go out on the road, you see spin that you don't see at home. You're pitched differently. You know, you just have different things that work and don't work for you because the opposite Coors Field effect going out on the road is a very real thing. So I think part of it for me is that because I can't really quantify a whole lot about the Rockies, because there are so many things that we don't know about how to make adjustments for Coors Field, it's just hard for me to buy in. And, you know, maybe that's something that's going to wind up hurting me throughout the season. It's not like I'm going to look to go against the Rockies necessarily, but I don't think I'll be running to back them a whole lot here. That being said, spoiler alert for later in the show, there is a spot to back the Rockies here coming up tonight. The Marlins take 2 out of 3 from San Diego. And this is one of those types of things, and I've talked about this before on regular Bang the Book radio broadcasts, about people not evaluating wins properly. You know, if you're playing a back-to-back in the NBA and you've got to go and beat, you know, Phoenix, let's say you're a 4.5-point favorite against Phoenix in a back-to-back and you beat them by 10, people are going to say, well, no shit, Phoenix is bad. You know, of course you're going to beat the Phoenix Suns. They're a terrible team. But let's say it's a back-to-back off playing Houston, you know, or maybe third game in 4 nights after the L.A. doubleheader. You go out and party on that off day and you still go and take care of business in Phoenix. That's really impressive. For the Marlins here to take 2 out of 3 from San Diego, after losing the first game of this series and after a brutal cross-country trip from Miami to Seattle, is very, very impressive to me. It's a 3-3 West Coast road trip. You aim to go 500 when you've got some of those compromising road situations. I was very impressed with what the Marlins did here this weekend, and I'm very impressed with what the Marlins have potential to do throughout the season. You know, they're going to finish up their road trip here in Philadelphia. They had a travel day to come back to the East Coast. They'll play 3 in Philly and then head back home. But this is a really solid lineup, you know, almost 1-7. If JT Realmuto is going to keep hitting 7th, that's a really tremendous 7 hitter. You got D. Gordon and Martin Prado at the top. Very high contact guys. That's going to set things up for Christian Yelich, Giancarlo Stanton, Marcelo Ozuna. I really like this Florida lineup, or this Miami lineup, a lot. Very, very impressive group. Of course, the starting pitching, not particularly great. We know that already. And, of course, the death of Jose Fernandez really hurts the upside of this starting rotation. But Dan Straley struck out 14 in 7 innings on Saturday. And does one start mean anything? Is one start predictive? No, not necessarily. But maybe the ball gets rolling for a guy like Dan Straley. You know, Tom Kohler pitched pretty well on Sunday to help them to a series win. Tom Kohler's a league average type of starter. You know, this bullpen is very, very good for the Marlins. It is a dominant bullpen, an exceptionally strong group. And the lineup is pretty good. So the Marlins are a team that I've started to make some adjustments with here throughout the season. If Giancarlo Stanton is healthy, that's a big, big boost for this offense. The Marlins, I would not be surprised if they find a way to win a wild card spot in that one game playoff. It would not shock me at all, especially with what's going on with the Giants and their struggles. And the NL Central doesn't look particularly strong right now. Teams are looking to hit a stride there. The Marlins could be the team to sneak in. I've been very impressed with what they've done here so far. One other thing I want to mention here, Jared Weaver. He pitched on Saturday, had another decent start. Teams need time to adjust to that kitchen sink arsenal, which I like to call it, where he just throws everything but the kitchen sink at the opposing lineup. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that moves. No, there's not a lot of refinement. There's clearly no velocity. But these are teams that are seeing him, you know, for the first time in several years, you know, because of the way that interleague play is done now. You basically play each division every 3 years. So a lot of these teams and lineups aren't seeing this guy very often. And there can be an adjustment curve there. You look at Yubaldo Jimenez, for example, who pitched very well against Cincinnati last week. They don't see him. You know, he's terrible in the American League because everyone sees him all the time. For Jared Weaver here, the league change probably beneficial for him. Again, I don't think that it's something sustainable throughout the course of the season. But here at the outset, teams have to make some adjustments. The Padres just 5-for-27 with runners in scoring position in this series, but they're getting chances. The Padres are going to be an over team for me this year because I think there are some good offensive pieces. They're aggressive on the base paths, and their starting pitching is terrible. We know that already. It's going to be really fun to watch this offense once manager Andy Green realizes that Eric Ibar does not need to hit second. Eric Ibar should not be hitting second. Hopefully that's something that changes here pretty quickly for the Padres. All right, let's go down the lines here, look at some of the line moves that have happened since we were last on the air on Thursday. Speaking of Thursday, a couple of moves there. A big move on Chris Sale in the early game against the Blue Jays. About a 50-cent move there in that one. I told you in my picks analysis piece, I thought that line was too high. There's a – whether teams want to say it or not, whether teams want to acknowledge it or not, when you get a getaway day game and your ace is on the mound, you know, the offense can sometimes take it easy that day. You know, figure, well, we don't need to score a whole lot here anyway. Terrible managerial decision by John Farrell to take Chris Sale out. Sale had thrown 102 pitches through 8 innings, struck out 10, maybe given up 2 hits or something like that. He had thrown 80 strikes. He threw 22 balls in 8 innings. And because of the stupid-ass save statistic, Craig Kimbrell comes in, gives up a home run. Now, of course, the Red Sox won in 10 innings. They put up a 3 spot in the 10th. But that could have been a really serious John Farrell blunder there had the offense not bailed him out. But you know, that is something you want to look for there in those getaway day excuse me, in those getaway day games. When the ace is on the mound, the offense probably isn't going to do a whole lot. So I don't know if you want to play a full game under, a team total under, something like that. But I think that's something on Thursdays that you can look at. Big move against James Paxton on Thursday as well. He went down about 30 cents against Oakland. That one worked out in a 9-6 A's win. I don't know if that was a fate of the Mariners or expecting regression from Paxton, but right now, if you're going to bet against the Mariners, James Paxton is not the guy that I would look to go against. Friday, we had a Jeremy Hellickson fade for the Phillies against the Atlanta Braves. Was this buying Bartolo Colon? Was this buying the Braves? Was this selling the Phillies? I don't know, but the Phillies look pretty decent to me right now. So I don't think I would look to make too many big moves going against the Phillies. We saw money come in on Noah Syndergaard against the Phillies with Aaron Nola on the mound. Maybe the market's lower on the Phillies than I am. That seems to be what I would look at there. But I like the Phillies. I think there's money to be made on the Phillies here this year. Matt Latos fade. That one didn't work out because the Blue Jays won in extra innings, but I would look to fade Matt Latos any chance that you get. Surprised to see an Adam Conley fade on Friday night against San Diego. I don't know if that was a move on Cahill. I don't know if that was a fade of Conley. I'm not entirely sure what the thought process was behind that. But again, probably not going to make a whole lot of money looking to back Trevor Cahill. Although I was looking at him, there were some interesting usage changes there that I think I talked about a little bit in my picks analysis piece. And if I didn't, it's something that I'll look at here this week when he takes another start, because those are things I always look for. I try to look for hidden value. Again, I want to apply context to everything. And if Trevor Cahill is going to be a little bit different, then maybe there's something there. Saturday, we saw what's become a daily Detroit Tigers fade. Now, the Detroit Tigers are off to a 10-8 start right now, and Buster Olney made some kind of tweet about great start for them with Miguel Cabrera hurt and whatever else he was talking about. I don't know. I don't really listen to Buster Olney a whole lot. But this is a Tigers team that's 10-8 and minus 14 in run differential. This is a paper Tiger. This is a smoke and mirrors situation. The offense has been way down. It seems like maybe some signs of aging finally from Ian Kinsler. Miguel Cabrera's hurt. Victor Martinez isn't doing anything. The bullpen is just awful. His rotation's not particularly good behind Verlander and Fulmer. So we're going to see a daily Tigers fade here, it certainly looks like. We saw it on Saturday with Adalberto Mejia getting money for the Twins. Then he actually got sent down after the game. Kyle Gibson took money on Sunday, and the Tigers hung a big number on him. We saw Daniel Norris get faded on Thursday. I don't know if it's a lack of Miggy and maybe the market feels like the price isn't right on the Tigers. I happen to think it's a Pythagorean win-loss fade because they're minus 14 in run differential. So if you like the Tigers, wait on them because I think that you're going to get some better numbers, of course, aside from when Justin Verlander's starting. But I mean, we've seen Michael Fulmer get faded too, and I disagree with that move. I really like Michael Fulmer. Good fastball command, plus changeup. So that's a really interesting thing to watch. You know, the Tigers are going to regress, but if you're backing Justin Verlander or Michael Fulmer, I think you're probably going to be okay. Also on Saturday, Michael Pineda steam, lather, rinse, repeat. We're going to keep seeing that throughout the year. Sunday, we saw some Houston money come in against Tampa Bay. Lots of Houston money throughout the series. The market wants to back Houston. I don't know if the market feels like the Astros are still underpriced or if they just want to be on that side, but it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with this Houston-Cleveland series here during the week, as I'll talk about a little bit later in the show. Saw some heavy Darvish against Kansas City for the Texas Rangers. That's not a big surprise. So the market fades Shelby Miller, also not a big surprise. Let's look at Monday here. Philip Hughes fade is the market backing Martin Perez. The market never backs Martin Perez. So that'll give you an idea of what the market thinks of Phil Hughes and the Minnesota Twins here. So Jason Vargas money coming in. I talked about him in my picks analysis piece, so go check that out. There's some good stuff there. Matt Cain fade today for the Giants against the Dodgers. Another day when Hyunjin Ryu gets steamed, and whatever. I mean, look, is it a Matt Cain fade? Is it a Giants fade? Probably some of both. But Ryu's taken on money in almost all of his starts this year. If you look at his numbers, very high ERA, very low xFIP. He's got like a 54.5% home run to fly ball rate. That's clearly not sustainable. That's not going to continue. But again, this is a guy that basically missed 2 years of the last 2 years, 2015 and 2016. Command is a problem. So, hey, if people want to lay $1.50 on Hyunjin Ryu, you go right ahead and do that. I'm not going to do it, but it's surprising to see him get steamed yet again here in this situation today. All right, so the pick for Monday night, and what's really unfortunate here is that we got kind of screwed a little bit here in this spot because I talked about this on Thursday with the Washington Nationals coming out of Sunday night baseball to take on the Colorado Rockies. And if we had Joe Ross on the mound for the Nationals, this is probably about a money line pick 'em. Unfortunately, we get Jacob Turner for the Nationals. So we see Colorado open minus 130, minus 125. I'm still gonna stay true to the situational spot because you got to think about it this way. So the Nationals last night, 2-hour and 43-minute game on Sunday Night Baseball. They're done about roughly 10:45 with that game. Okay, shower, pack things up, do your media obligations, all that type of stuff. They're at the airport at what, midnight maybe? You got a 4-hour flight out to Denver. Don't know, the Denver airport is massive. It's one of the biggest airports in the country. It's about a 30-minute outside of downtown Denver, at least about a 30-minute away from Coors Field. I'm sure the players are staying very close to Coors Field. So you've got about a 30-minute trip there. You get a 4-hour flight. Yeah, you get 2 hours back. So the local time is a little bit different, but your body clock is still on Eastern Standard Time. So, you know, you look at the situation here for the Nationals. They got in very, very late, 7-game win streak. Back-to-back division sweeps. They just swept the Mets on the road at Citi Field. This is a terrible situational spot for Washington. So I will back the Colorado Rockies here today. Again, I wish the price would have been about 15 cents lower like it would have been if we were actually getting that Joe Ross start. Minus 125, minus 130, a little bit of a price to pay on Tyler Anderson with the way he's pitching right now. But still, I have to trust the situational spot. I'm a big believer in circadian rhythm. You know, it's a learning curve, too, to go and play at Coors Field, which is something the Nationals only do 3 or 4 games a year. It's a tough, tough spot now to go play in that thin air, long trip, riding a high. You know, pardon the pun, because it is Denver and marijuana is legal out there now. But I have to back this situational spot. So I will take the Rockies here tonight. Again, I'm pissed off about the loss of value because Joe Ross isn't getting the start, but still. I think you got to do it here. I just think you have to trust the situational spot and look to play on it. You know, and then also, hey, if you want to fade Steven Strasburg tomorrow, Colorado is going to be a home dog. Chris Rusin's getting the start for them in that one. A lot of players say the second day is the worst day. You know, I've heard Aaron Boone talk about it before on Baseball Tonight or whatever he used to be on. That second day angle is a legit thing. So I think that's something you can keep in mind here as well. All right, so we're going to do the Monday mailbag instead of today's sabermetric stat of the day. We'll start things off with the two baseball questions. And like I said, I have a non-baseball question. The first question from at MikeyDFS86 on Twitter. What is the difference between command and control? And I love this question because I don't think a whole lot of people know what the difference is or pay too much attention to it. So control is, in my mind, the ability to throw strikes. Command is the ability to throw quality strikes. So that's the big difference to me. For example, Josh Tomlin, tremendous control. One of the lowest walk rates in baseball year after year. Command, not always there. Gives up a lot of home runs. It happens when you throw a lot of strikes, but you've got to throw quality strikes. So command is much more important to me. You know, a lot of guys can throw strikes. A lot of guys can throw cock shots, middle, right down the barrel. But can guys paint the black? Can guys shave the edges, you know, with a two-seam fastball and some comeback run? Can they do it with a four-seam fastball at the knees on the outer half? That's the big thing. A lot of guys can throw strikes, and a lot of guys wind up being effectively wild, too. There are some guys that don't have a whole lot of control that, because their pitches move so much, you know, they still get swings and misses. But control is just the ability to throw strikes. Control is the ability to be in the zone. Command is the ability to throw strikes that guys can't do as much damage with, you know, to stay off the barrel, get guys off on the end of the bat, jam guys in on the handle. That's what command is. So you talk about a guy, I think Michael Pineda is probably the best example of this. If you look at his strikeout and walk metrics, his control is very, very good. But if you look at his BABIP against and his home run rate, his command is not good. So that's the big thing there. You know, you want guys that have good command. That is the biggest thing, is finding those guys that can keep the ball in the ballpark, throw a lot of strikes, and, you know, you have to have good control to have command too, for the most part, you know, because to have good command, you need to be able to be in the zone, but it's about throwing good pitches in the zone. It's about, you know, being able to change that eye level, hitting the top of the zone, hitting the bottom of the zone, hitting the edges. There are too many guys out there that just don't have both, and there are too many guys out there that have one and not the other. And again, like I said, you look at a guy like Michael Pineda, that's probably your best current example of good control, but not a whole lot of command. And Philip Hughes is another one, actually. Philip Hughes, good, very good control. He doesn't walk a whole lot of guys. But the problem is, he throws that cutter that burrows down and into lefties, and it goes down and in right into the hitting zone, as opposed to being able to bury it in on the thumbs to where they're breaking bats and things like that. So that's the two big differences there between control and command. At Anarchist187 asked about umpire rotations, asked if they were the same for the whole series. Yes, they are, but they move clockwise. So the guy who's at first will be behind the plate the next day. The guy who's behind the plate will move to third base. So if you're looking from a total standpoint, those are something you can look at. You go in, look at the box score, see, okay, you know, Kerwin Danley was at first base last night. Kerwin Danley's behind the plate the next night. So you can go ahead and hit that overnight number if it's an umpire that's a really good underplay, a good overplay, something like that. So the umpires do stay the same. And also the crews travel together. That's something else that you want to keep in mind here. You don't always know where they're going prior to the start of a series. Major League Baseball tries to keep that information close to the vest. But the way that they move throughout the series is something that you can figure out, can account for. And like I said, they move clockwise. So third to second, second to first, first to home, home to third. So the non-baseball question here comes from at EA underscore streak on Twitter, asking about NFL power ratings and how to set those up. Wants to do that here for the first time this year. Kudos for that. You know, he's been researching different strategies, but wants to hear my opinion on some of the best practices or what I've seen. A lot of times, you know, people do the position group scale. What I like to do, I like to do a scale of 100. I do this for college football as well, where you want to focus on the most important units of a team, the units that have the most impact on games. For me, that's the quarterback, the offensive line, the defensive line, and the coaching. So what I like to do is I do a 15-point scale with them, generally about 5 to 15, 6 to 15, something like that, of quarterback, offensive and defensive lines, and coaching. So that's 60 points right there. Then I'll do a 10-point scale of running backs, wide receivers, linebackers, defensive backs, 10 points apiece, 40 points there. Boom, you've got your scale out of 100. So that's the way that I like to do it, because I think that, you know, you really need to focus on the trenches. It's a quarterback-driven league in the NFL. Maybe in college you could say it's a little bit different in terms of the importance of the quarterback. But in the NFL, it's certainly very, very important to have a good quarterback at that position. So that's why I do the 15 points for the quarterback, the two lines and the coaches, and then 10 points for each position group outside of that. And then the second part of the question there from at EA Streak is about adjustments, how often and how significant adjustments should be made. Well, obviously for injuries, you want to make adjustments there, and you don't want to do too much. You know, one of the things I think you want to focus on in terms of putting together your ratings is to look at the two deep. You know, you have to incorporate that. It's not enough to just look at the starters, because guys get hurt all the time in football. Some guys play through injuries, some guys don't. You want to look at the two deep. You know, you want to know when you're grading the running backs, yeah, you look at the bell cow, but who's the third down guy? You know, who's the third down guy, the blitz pickup guy? Who's going to step in if the starter gets hurt, blows a hamstring, something like that. You want to know those things. It can be a little bit more challenging for some of the defensive players and the guys in the trenches, but you have to do that. So if you do that from the start, your adjustments don't have to be as significant if you get injuries or if there's some shuffling on the offensive line. You know, the second string center becomes the starting right guard because the right guard's a turnstile. Those are things that you can account for in your preseason work. So if you do that, your adjustments shouldn't be all that significant. And you always want to be looking to adjust. You don't want to make really big adjustments. You don't want to be moving your power ratings on a team, you know, 3-4 points every week. But you want to reevaluate performance after every game, reevaluate performances with some of those injuries. And then, of course, you know, if the coaches talk about shuffling positions on the lines, all that type of stuff. So again, it's like anything else. You always want to be adjusting, always want to be looking for edges. But if you've got a good foundation ahead of time, then your adjustments don't need to be that significant. So good question there. And again, if you've got any Monday mailbag questions, baseball related or not, hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods. It's going to be the best way to reach me with those. Quick daily fantasy tip here for today's show. Look at batted ball distribution changes. Look for guys hitting more fly balls. Ryan Zimmerman is one that comes to mind here. So Ryan Zimmerman is off to a very, very good start. Daniel Murphy had a good year last year. Daniel Murphy, there was an article at Fangraphs not that long ago, a StatCast. Mike Petrello wrote it for MLB.com, where he asked a bunch of players about, you know, the new trend in terms of trying to elevate the baseball, trying to hit more fly balls. And Daniel Murphy had a career year from a power standpoint, and he's been talking with his Nationals teammates and saying, hey, guys, look, you know, focus on your launch angle. Focus on trying to hit the ball higher. Try to focus on elevating a little bit more. You know, ground balls are great. Ground ball singles are fantastic. But doubles and dingers are the way to score runs now. And Ryan Zimmerman worked on his launch angle, listened to Daniel Murphy, and he's had a really strong start to the season. So go through and look at some of those guys that are hitting more fly balls this year, because one of the nice things about batted ball distribution is that it stabilizes very, very quickly. Ground ball rate, based on the work done by Russell Carlton in terms of sample size, ground ball rate stabilizes about 40 plate appearances. Fly ball rate, about 170 plate appearances. So guys are about halfway to that fly ball rate stabilizing. So keep an eye out for those batted ball distributions, because I think you can find some really good daily fantasy value. You know, if you can pick up on those guys that started hitting more fly balls maybe late last year or are doing it here this year because they're going to do some more damage. Overall, I mentioned stabilization rates for batted ball distribution. Sample sizes are getting more significant. We're starting to see some of these numbers normalize a little bit, starting to see some of those hitter tendencies. You know, it's been a decent start to the season for us here so far. The isolated plays on the show have done well. The picks and analysis have done fairly well overall, but we're starting to get to that point now in the month of May, probably mid-May or so, where what I like to use to handicap really becomes significant to me. So hopefully we'll get off on a nice run. All right, so what am I looking for here the week ahead? Well, that Houston-Cleveland series is a possible ALCS preview for one thing. I've got Dallas Keuchel, Josh Tomlin on Tuesday, Lance McCullers and Trevor Bauer on Wednesday, and I'm very excited to watch that game. Two guys with exceptional stuff. I haven't gotten to see McCullers yet. That should be a really fun one there for me. Then Charlie Morton and Corey Kluber coming up on Thursday. Intriguing pitching matchups. Obviously, the Tomlin one is a detriment for Cleveland on Tuesday, but two excellent bullpens, exciting young offensive players. Should be a really, really great series. One angle I'm kind of considering a little bit here, and this is tough because the Indians will probably lose that Keuchel-Tomlin game on Tuesday, although at the very least, they'll be a home dog for that one. The Indians might have a series advantage here because a lot of the Houston power comes from the right side, and Progressive Field is very tailored to left-handed hitters. You get the high wall in right field. They did some things architecturally to open up the ballpark a little bit there in the left field side. Now, or in the right field side, excuse me. Now, they didn't say that there were any significant park factor changes based on the data that they had looked at. But if you look at the data for Progressive Field, it has changed, and it's changed fairly significantly. So because the Indians have a little bit more left-handed power, maybe that plays to their advantage here. But you've got some guys that don't really give up a whole lot of home runs, excuse me, in Keuchel, McCullers, and Morton here. So maybe it kind of mitigates that advantage a little bit. but it should be a really, really fun series to watch. Indians coming off of a good 5-1 trip. Houston played well in Tampa Bay over the weekend. Should be a good one there. And another thing to keep in mind, I've thought that Cleveland prices have been a little bit high here of late. Houston's been taking steam a lot. I want to see how this series is lined, what the market movement looks like, because the Indians have taken a lot of money when their premier starters have gone. Now, only one of them goes here in this series, with just Kluber on Thursday. But I'm curious to see how the market sets up for this series. That'll be something that's really fun to watch. The Washington-Colorado series, as you know, Colorado the pick for tonight. Jacob Turner, Tyler Anderson on Monday. Steven Strasburg, Chris Rusin on Tuesday. Tanner Roark and Tyler Chatwood on Wednesday. Gio Gonzalez, Antonio Senzatella on Thursday. That's a getaway day game. It's an early start time there. Tough spots here for Washington in this series. Monday, obviously, we've talked about. Tuesday, the second day after that long travel. I'm curious to see how this series plays out. It's hard to play a series price in a four-game series, but Colorado is going to have some value here in this one, I think. You know, Senzatella is facing a lineup that hasn't seen him. Tanner Roark's really the only guy I really like in this series for Washington. I like Steven Strasburg, obviously, but I don't know how much run support he gets in that game on Tuesday. So maybe a Rockies series price here, despite it being a four-gamer, could be a pretty worthwhile investment there for you. I also want to see if the Rockies can keep winning all these close games. You know, their bullpen's been really, really good. They're very good in one-run games so far. Can they keep that pace up if they get some of those here against Washington? And then finally, Toronto and St. Louis. Brutal, brutal travel schedule for Toronto. We're going to have another circadian rhythm situational play on Tuesday night here. Game tonight, and then they go to St. Louis for Tuesday. So they're going to finish up very late in Anaheim. They're going to lose 2 hours on the flight to St. Louis. It's a brutal spot for Toronto on Tuesday here. Marco Estrada, Michael Wacha, the pitching matchup in that one. Matt Latos, Carlos Martinez on Wednesday. Aaron Sanchez, Adam Wainwright on Thursday. Some really bad spots for Toronto in this series. Tuesday night, I would like to play the Cardinals. I think that's going to be one that comes through. I also think it will be a fairly reasonable price. It's going to be probably in the minus 135, minus 140 range, I would say. I think that's a price worth looking at. And then Matt Latos on Wednesday against Carlos Martinez. Situation definitely favors the Cardinals there in that one. Toronto's got a pitching matchup advantage on Thursday if Aaron Sanchez is able to go. I'm not a big believer in Adam Wainwright, but that'll be the last game on what's been a tough trip for them. So, you know, that's a tough spot to back a team. Toronto's in three difficult spots this weekend, and I really do like the Cardinals here on Tuesday night. Lots of thoughts here in today's edition of the Bettors Box. As I said, our Tuesday Takeover show coming up tomorrow. We'll have Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible to talk some NFL draft props and some other things like that. Again, reach out on Twitter at Skating Tripods if there's anything you ever want to ask me about, including the Monday mailbag. And we'll have another edition of the Bettors Box coming up on Thursday. Remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.